B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with pet Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
We didn't play well against Tampa. We didn't play well against the Yankees on Sunday. Today was a good baseball game. You know, it's just one of those that, you know, the way it looked in the first inning, I thought it was going to be 13-12. Both pitchers did an outstanding job. You know, that big swing put us in a bad spot.
It was a good baseball game, everyone. All right. From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, Tim McCone, and you at 617-779-0985. That is a post-game soundbite from, and I'm using what you refer to him as in your email you sent to me early this morning, Chris, the Baghdad Bob of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. After last night's 4-2 loss to the New York Yankees, a listless, gutless, mailed-in performance from a dead-ass ball club after that first inning. That's what that was. That's something they've looked like all week. It's over. It's over. Here lie the 2019 Boston Red Sox, an underachieving group of babies, save for Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, maybe Eduardo Rodriguez and Christian Vasquez. That's it. They've now lost five straight for the first time since 2015. Oh, what else happened that year? Oh, yeah, they missed the playoffs. They've seemingly given up. Since they didn't get any help at the trade deadline, like a bunch of babies. This is just a loser team that hasn't gotten his act together since this zero-urgency spring training where they were still living in the past. 108 wins, the World Series championship. Ah, nah, we can just show up. It'll all be fine. And with each passing game, Chris, it is looking more and more like last year might have been the aberration when you look at like the last four or five seasons. They deserve your scorn. And soon, if not right now, as of today, with the doubleheader on tap, they might even deserve your apathy, which I've always said is about the worst thing you can feel as a sports fan for a team you root for. When you have apathy, when you look at the team and just say, I don't even care, that's actually worse than actually feeling, you know, anger towards them, because you at least still care when you're angry at them.
Definitely.
But they're teetering. And when you get to apathy, when you just say, I know there's 2 months left, but you know what? There's better things to do. I really don't care. That's when it's bad. And I think they're kind of close, if not already there.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels that way. And I think there's a little bit of, look, why should you not reflect the mood of the organization, which I think is apathy as well. It's sort of like, well, you know, if we make it, we make it. If we don't, we don't. You know, I've nicknamed them the K-Sarah Red Sox. That's what it is. Like, well, you know, we don't need to add anything. We think there's some talent here. It hasn't lived up to its billing after at the point of the trade deadline, you know, 109, 110 games. But maybe they'll turn it around. Or maybe they won't. But either way, we're good. And that's sort of what it seems to be. You know, they pocketed the World Series championship last year, felt really good about it, had a historic year, franchise record for wins, 108, go on and win another 11 more, 119, probably the greatest Red Sox team of all time, definitely the greatest Red Sox team of my lifetime. And it seems like that's enough. They're satisfied. They're content. And it started, as you said, in spring training when they sort of showed up and said, well, we got this whole thing figured out. Like, we figured this out last year. What do you mean? This is a different book. No, it's a different chapter. Same book of excellence. We're just going to roll out the baseballs and turn it on. And they haven't been able to do that. And I think you've seen complacency from the top down. I think it starts with the front office and the idea of like, well, I'll just bring back the same team. Evaldi, what do you want? Here's a blank check. 17 mil? Sure, you're a fifth starter who gets injured all the time and could basically claim residence on the injured list. No, that's cool. You were great in the playoffs. Steve Pierce, World Series MVP.
Shows up fat and out of shape and then ends up hurting himself, and that's it. You don't see him the rest.
I know you guys are classic rentals, but we assembled the greatest team of all time. We got to bring that whole thing back, just minus, you know, relief pitchers. And so we'll do that. And then what Cora said in spring training, so it trickles down to the manager's office. And I think it trickled down to the clubhouse. And the one thing I'll say, Jim, is that I think Alex Cora is an excellent manager. I really do. But I think the one thing he underestimated, and I sent you another quote, you know, in our email exchange last night, where he sort of, for the first time this year, I think, said, like, you know, I'm learning. This is different. Maybe I didn't know what I didn't know. But I think that he sort of underestimated the fact that when he came in last year, the urgency was baked into the team. Those guys were desperate to prove that they weren't just a regular season only team, that they could win in the playoffs. and it permeated the whole organization. Everybody was on notice, from Dombrowski to the players. We have to prove that we can get out of the first round, and not only get out of the first round, but that we can win a championship in this window. And they did it. And I think the whole organization felt like David Price. We hold all the cards now.
Yeah. And here's that quote, too. I'm learning. It's a learning experience, Cora said after being asked about the difference between fighting for playoff position rather than fending off those fighting behind you. My only managing experience was 108 wins or whatever it was. Oh, yeah, like he's going to pretend he doesn't know. And the magic carpet all the way to the World Series. We're about to find out. Like I told somebody yesterday, and we've been talking about since last year, short-term goals. Try to win series. If you win every series this month, somebody can do the math for me. I think it's 20 wins. We don't have to sweep either. We can do that, but we have to play better. It starts here. This is where it starts. And I like him. I think he's a pretty upfront dude, especially compared to the guy who he replaced in John Farrell, who talked like a robot and gave you like boilerplate nonsense on a night-to-night
sure.
basis. And there are certain things he's done this year that I really like. I think he is definitely, he has his finger on the pulse and has reached some of the Latino players on this team this year, like Eduardo Rodriguez.
Yep.
And even last night, I like that he said, he was asked, hey, last year, if Eduardo had that same kind of first inning last year, do you think he would have folded? And he stopped for a second, and he was like, honestly, yeah. And I think he's really reached Eduardo Rodriguez, who's been their best pitcher for the last month, month and a half.
Yeah.
Bogarts is having a phenomenal season. Look at the year you're getting out of Vasquez, Rafael Devers. So
sure.
he's definitely done a good job there. But the excuse-making, this whatever kind of attitude, the way he was talking after last night's game, I think he's played into the complacency.
I agree. And I totally agree with you on that. And I think for the first time last night with that quote that you just read, he's sort of admitting, I don't have all the answers, you know? And I think that's sort of the first step. Because I think I think he's an excellent manager. I think there's something tactical to, even though I was teasing him and joking. I mean, there are times that I feel like he just repeats the same refrain, especially the first half of the year. It drove me nuts with the, you know, what happened in 2018 and referencing back to that. But I also think, having played here, Alex Cora knows how much negativity there is. And so he's trying to counteract that. Like, he knows that it's easy for that negativity to seep into his clubhouse. So I think part of what he does is calculated to counteract that. And he's good at that. And that's what he does. So I think that even some of these things he says at times, you know, he's just trying to be positive because he knows there's enough negativity to go around. But I thought that was a step forward. I didn't like the first quote about a good game, but I thought the other one was really telling, where he's saying, look, you know, this is my second year as a manager. He's basically admitting that, okay, this is not the way I thought it would go.
Right. Now
I've learned something here.
Now the real work begins, because those guys were motivated coming
into
spring training last year. They totally were. And this year it's just show up fat and happy. Look what we accomplished last year, and we'll be fine. We can just show up. The rest of the American League is bad enough. We'll clean up on them. And that's the thing. Like, they've lost to bad teams. Going back a couple of weekends ago, where they lose the series to the Orioles, who are essentially like a Triple-A club. And after putting up 17 runs, the next day they get one hit by a 30-year-old journeyman. Are you kidding me? Like, it's just been that time and time and time again. And to use his words, when he has given them harsh critiques, and I don't think it's been enough, when he's called them consistently inconsistent, that's this ball club. And now, it doesn't even feel like that, Chris. Now it just feels like they're going down the tank. And their response, their collective response after the trade deadline press conference from Dave Dombrowski, and we'll touch on that throughout, you know, the afternoon, that to me is the most telling. That shows how inherently gutless they are. And Bogarts cares, Devers cares. They've been outspoken after games like that on Tuesday night. And Rick Porcello gets, you know, bashed, his face bashed in, five runs, and that's it. And they basically, like, yeah, you know, they bend over.
He cares. Porcello cares. The execution hasn't been there.
And it's just, yeah, but but even last night after that first inning, like, it was just, there was nothing. Like, it was a boring, listless game. There was an air of
resignation.
Resignation and waving the white flag. And that's bad with 2 months to go here. Because, look, they've lost five straight, and they're now, what, four back in the wild card? They still have a shot. You're still in it, but it certainly doesn't feel that way.
Well, it probably doesn't feel that way to them, because they're looking at, I know we're going to talk about this later, but I think that they look at it and say, all right, all year long, you know, the manager's been telling us, like, we can do it. And we know that they believe in us, and we know the manager believes in us, and he does. Oh, wait, the front office doesn't believe in us. They didn't get us any help. And these guys, you know, these guys are bright guys. Like, they know what's going on. They can probably point back to deflating losses where it's like, man, if we had a closer, we would have gotten out of that one. I mean, they know that they have some very good bullpen guys and Workman and Barnes, but they also know those guys aren't closers. And so it's like, okay, we're going to do the no closer thing, but we need a little bit more help, even with Barnes and Workman, just getting to those guys, if this is what we're going to do. Red Sox didn't even go out and do that. And you look at it, and if you're those guys, how can you take it any other way? Look, I think there's two ways you can take it. And I said this to you yesterday in Felger and Maz. You know, you can sort of turn it into like Major League and put the Dave Dombrowski cutout there. Right. And for every win, we're going to pull something off and say, forget this guy. We're going to show him. Or you can sort of be like, man, they don't really believe in us. We need help. We've known it all year long. We need more help in the bullpen. They didn't do anything for us. I think that shows you like how they feel. Like, they don't think we're going to make it. And then you're like, we're not going to make it. Like, you know, and I feel like it's been the latter.
All right, 617-779-0985. We'll hear from you early and often today if you want to bitch about the Red Sox. Or maybe you've already reached apathy. You look at them and say, you know what, the hell with this. I don't care. They stink. If they're going to play like they don't care, I don't care about them. Dave in Plymouth, you're first up here this morning on Gasper and Murray. Hello.
Good morning, guys. Christopher, your columns have increased my vocabulary to the point that my family doesn't recognize me anymore. So... thanks for that. No, guys, I just wanted to jump in on this. Doesn't this go back to John Henry saying we're not going to pass that luxury tax threshold so that we're not going to spend? To me, when I saw that comment, I thought there's going to be no deadline deal unless they're moving salary to get somebody else. And if they move salary, aren't they just saying, yeah, we're not good enough this year? You know, it's just we're going to start to blow it up. To me, it was Henry's quote that started it, and then Dombrowski basically confirming it with his press conference saying, yeah, I don't, you know, right now it's the wild card or nothing.
I'll say this. Look, I think there were moves that they could have made, and my colleague Alex Spear reported, you look at the guys that moved, you're only paying a guy's salary for a third of the year. They could have made moves for middle relievers, even Shane Green. They still would have been under the luxury tax. So I don't think the luxury tax at the end of the day was the issue. I mean, if that's the way Dombrowski felt, then I'd say you have to be a little more creative. You can't just always, you know, go for the highest priced guy and throw money at. There were relievers they could have acquired and still stayed under the luxury tax. And I also think you can look at it, too, and go back to Dombrowski. I put it more on him than Henry, because you can look at it and say 2 years in a row, you have the highest payroll in baseball, Jim. Well, could you have allocated your resources a little better? Like, maybe re-signing Steve Pierce at $6.25 million and Eovaldi for $17 million a year wasn't the best allocation of resources, especially when the reliever market was pretty depressed last year. You could have brought in, like, two relievers. You could have spent that money differently.
All right, who are you mad at after what's been an ugly week for the Red Sox? The worst in a long time. You know, again, they haven't lost five in a row since 2015. So are you mad at Dave Dombrowski for doing nothing at the trade deadline and the brass overall? Or is it the players who really look like they've waved the white flag this week? 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls and a lot of Patriots stuff to get to of what's been sort of an eventful camp over the last few days, and at least in terms of Patriots news, kind of a somewhat eventful last 24 hours, including news on Josh Gordon. We'll get to that coming up here in this first hour. Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Weekdays at 10, 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
And the Red Sox fall for the fifth consecutive time. They had not lost as many as five in a row since July of 2015. But it's five in a row as the Yankees take game one tonight here in the Bronx by a final score of 4-2.
Honestly, I'm not frustrated today. I was more frustrated with the way we played against Tampa. You know, there's games that, hey, you're going to get beat like that. You know, the guy on the mound is going to do a good job. I think our guy was outstanding. It was just a good baseball game, you know, and it happened.
See, now that should piss you off. If you haven't reached apathy yet for the Red Sox, and they're 4-2 loss to the Yankees last night, now five straight, as you just heard there, that kind of comment from Alex Cora when it's over, that should still piss you off. Like, that was still a good game. Was it? You were happy with the performance of your ball club after that first inning. Okay, so Eduardo Rodriguez settled down after he gives up the grand slam to Gleyber Torres. Still walked six guys, and okay, got a little bit hosed. I thought he did get a little bit hosed in that first inning by the umpire, but overall, like, just, I don't know, did you see that hideous play by Mookie Betts? I think it was in the eighth inning in right field, too, where he misplayed a ball. Like, the bats were silent. It just felt like they mailed it in. He still thought it was a good game? Like, that, I don't know. I just find that, like, gross for him to say that after that game.
Yeah, it's a little surprising after that one, because, I mean, it's a results-oriented business. I mean, I guess you can look at it and say, hey, look, you know, Rodriguez really made one bad pitch. But the idea that at this point they're sort of down to, again, highest payroll in baseball, defending World Series champions, and you're down to sort of taking moral victories, out of damaging losses to your arch rival? Like, is that really what the season has come to? Like, claiming moral victories?
That's what it feels like, and that's bad. And you still got three games to go here with a doubleheader today, and then tomorrow night's game, which is supposed to be started by David Price, rather, who was put on paternity leave. So I'm reserving judgment there. I was told from Matt McCarthy of Hardcore Baseball, that podcast, you should check out a 98.5 Sports Hub, and Jimmy Stewart, executive producer of Philgram Nest, saying yesterday, you know what? That was just roster manipulation because Marco Hernandez has been hot. They don't want to send him back down. That's all it is, Murray. Okay, I'll believe you for now.
Isn't Jay Happ also on paternity for the Yankees?
I can't speak to that, but I'll...
I thought I saw that, and so it might have been a matching roster move more to that point, that I think Jay Happ is also on paternity leave for the Yankees, and so the Red Sox might have looked at that and said, oh... We got to match this until, you know, you get the extra player today because it's a doubleheader anyway, but for last night's game, and then, you know, you just want to have the extra guy.
Yeah, but I'm not going to go full Felger on you. Of course, he lost his mind when Al Horford went on paternity leave for the Celtics a few years back. At, you know, the babies at Deadspin made a whole thing about it. I'm usually not that guy, but I know these are sensitive times we're living in, Chris. And, you know, congratulations to the Price family. I guess they had the baby. She had the baby Thursday night, his wife did, and everything's
very cool.
Fine. So great.
Congrats. That's awesome.
But if he doesn't pitch tomorrow night, that to me will reek of... Oh, the hell with this. I don't even want to be there anyway. The season's going in the toilet. Eh. And then I'll jump on him on Monday. But for now, I'll reserve judgment because I am firm but fair, Chris. 617-779-0985. Time to bitch about the Red Sox. Old school Red Sox bitching. They deserve it. Kyle in New Hampshire, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello.
Hey, Gaspar Murray. What's up, guys?
What's up?
Not too much. What's going on?
Not much. You guys talking about apathy. I have about... 12 hours away from apathy. So, I think if Sale comes out tonight and actually throws a gem and actually gets his team, you know, pumped up and I finally see some heart in these guys, I mean, I might begin to start believing, but, I mean, 12 hours, if they blow these two, I'm out. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kyle. So maybe this is it. Maybe these next three games, like, that'll be the tipping point. And if they lose two out of three come Monday, they will, much like how the team has looked, wave the white flag
and
say the hell with this.
Let's take the big picture view quickly. We all talked about this 14-game stretch, right, and what it meant for the team and what they had to do and what they had to prove. They got off to a great start. They won five of the first six. Then they've dropped five in a row. So now there's three games left, and they're 5-6 during this stretch. So it's not just about today. It's not just about this series. It's where are they at after the 14 games? Are you below water? Are you above water? Are you at 500? Where are you? Because even if they, win two of the next three, and it's like, okay, well, you went 7-7. That is not horrible, but the position you put yourself in, you needed to do better. And those guys said that before the stretch started. They said, we know the position we're in. You know, we have to make up some ground here. We have to play better. So if all you do is tread water, then that's not going to cut it. So they're in a tough spot. This whole 14-game stretch overall, it's hard to see it ending with the Red Sox making any sort of improvement or any real dent in their postseason chances.
Still, that being said, I feel like you're, well, certainly between the two of us, you're much more even-keeled than I am. But in the big picture, you're a more even-keeled, sports reporter, Chris. But
sure.
you've been hard on the American League as a whole all season long, when, Texas has been in wild card contention. You're like, please, the Rangers, they suck.
Yeah, they stink.
But
they still stink.
I don't know. Do you still think, as bad as it's been here for this week, and even if they lost these next two out of three, or even lose the next three and get swept, do you still think that they could maybe make a push for a wild card?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I still think they could back in. I mean, at this point, it's pretty much backing in. I think it's possible as long as they don't completely fall apart, which is sort of what's happening now. But if they can just hold it together, I mean, who knows? You know, Tampa Bay and Oakland are two bottom five payroll teams. They don't have a lot of margin for error with their rosters, even though they tried to make upgrades, and they did make upgrades at the trade deadline. Well, you didn't, which was extraordinarily disappointing when you look at it from that standpoint.
And their additions seemingly made an immediate impact, at least in that game.
Aguilar for the Rays and the pitchers, too. And then you look at Jake Diekman, who went to Oakland, and they got Homer Bailey and Tanner Roark. So... But the reality is, those teams could fall apart. They could falter because they don't have a ton of depth and they don't have a lot of, money when they built their rosters. So I'm not writing the Red Sox off completely, but I will say this. Like, when you look at it, Jim, and they're at this point, I have given up on the first wild card. I think it's second wild card or bust at this point. But when they're competing with Oakland and Tampa Bay, and if they can't beat those teams to get in an American League where literally a third of the league is tanking, look at it. There's 15 teams. There are a minimum five teams that are full-on tanking. Two of them are in your division in Toronto and Baltimore. That is a real indictment of this team.
Mike, you are next up here on Gaspar and Murray on the Red Sox. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Quick. Does turn it around, and you go into the offseason, and their roster is as far behind the Yankees and even the Astros as it looks like it's going to be going into next year. How do you not trade Mookie Betts and try to get something for him instead of letting him walk after next year? Because it's almost like a waste if you're as far behind the Yankees and Houston and you can't improve your team. I don't see them improving the pitching staff and doing an overhaul going into next year and making it look like they're going to compete with those teams. So why would you keep them at this point and not try to get something for them, I guess is my question.
I'm 100% behind that feeling, Mike. If this goes into the toilet the way it feels like it has and they miss the playoffs, you have to shop Mookie Betts when his value is going to be at the highest this winter. You have to. Even if he puts asses in seats and he's now going to be a season removed from an MVP year. And he really, okay, some of the numbers are down, comparatively speaking.
He leads the league in run and score.
Yeah, but he's still a
productive player.
Still had a productive, decent year. But you got to shop him. I think you do. Because I'm like you, Chris. And I think a lot of people now, the growing sentiment is here, he probably doesn't want to sign long term. I think he's maybe been influenced by David Price, who I also think hates it here. But, you know, he ended up opting in. But you have to. You have to try to get some sort of return here. You can't just let him walk after 2020.
I think it depends on the full picture of the team. You know, if you have a chance, you can make an argument as a big market team that, let's say, J.D. Martinez does not opt out and you still have him. You can make an argument that you should make one more run at it and that you'll take the championship and you know, take your chances with Mookie and take the qualifying pick and, you know, I mean, make him the qualifying offer and take the draft pick and all that stuff if he bounces. You can make that argument. So I think a lot of it sort of hinges on where are they at the end of the year. Does J.D. Martinez, you know, opt out? Because if he does, he's probably gone. Porcello's gone. What do you do? And then you're looking at that year and you're saying, okay, you know, we can't really spend as much and Mookie's sort of non-committal. At that point, I think you do have to shop him.
617-779-0985. You want to join us and bitch about the Red Sox? Because now is the time to do it. We do have to touch on the Patriots, though. After hearing nothing about Josh Gordon for really months now, we maybe have a little movement on his return to the Patriots at training camp. We will get to that. In fact, Tim McCone's going to tell you a little bit about that here in the Hub headlines. And we'll get to the Patriots coming up here on Gaspar Murray, 98.5 Sports Hub.
Gaspar and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tom, is there a level of...
How was it working with Josh Gordon during the offseason?
With Josh, it was... there wasn't, you know, many opportunities, but he was around and I needed someone to catch. So, you know, he's... I've always enjoyed playing with him and obviously hope everything works out for him and I'm hoping the best, certainly.
We don't have anything to do with Josh Gordon. It's just not, I mean, you talk to the league. We have no control over Josh Gordon.
Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So if you missed Tim McCone's Hub headlines there, a little bit of news on Josh Gordon, who has been almost non-existent, really, for the last couple of months. And the way that Patriots quarterback Tom Brady and head coach Bill Belichick, you heard there, talking about him this week, almost referring to him in a past tense. At least Tom Brady was, Chris, like saying, hope everything works out, wish him the best. We have nothing to do with Josh Gordon, is what Belichick said. You got to talk to the league, and it gets a little bit snippy about that. And it's just been nothing. And going back to May, beginning of May, I think it was, Tom Brady's posting a quick little video on his Instagram page where he's throwing a Josh Gordon in his backyard, and that's what he was alluding to in that clip, too, and just saying, I just needed someone to throw to, like it was, you know, a local bus driver or Uber Eats guy just dropping off some, you know, some avocados for Tom and the family. Like, hey, you got a minute? Okay, Mr. Brady. No, it was Josh Gordon. It seemed like he was going to be on his way back. And then it was just nothing. Like, no posts from him, Gordon on his Instagram post since the spring. Like, it's just been nothing for a couple of months. And now, again, they're talking about him like, well, he's just gone. We can't rely on him. Talk to the league. Well, this morning, coming in, someone retweeted me, or someone tweeted at me, rather, this Howard Balzer, who didn't have a blue check mark. And
he's legit. I know Howard. He's worked for like the Sports Exchange for a long time. He's pretty plugged.
Well, once I looked at his little avatar and saw the photo, I was like, oh, okay, I know who this guy is. But I will say, I'm usually kind of an uppity when it comes to, you know, someone, you know,
well, you did get burned on that Johnny Gaudreau deal.
Right, yeah. Johnny Gaudreau turns out not a Bruin. So, yeah, I kind of don't trust, you know, people try to tweet me news without someone with a blue check mark. So I was like, oh, well, this is crap. But he tweeted, 8:43 this morning, heard from a league source, that Josh Gordon has filed for reinstatement from suspension. So, yeah, I look at the account and say, like, oh, okay, this is a real guy that's covered the NFL. How about that? Heard from a league source that Josh Gordon has filed for reinstatement from suspension. And now Sharian Williams, who I think works for...
Shireen
Williams, yep. Who does stuff for Pro Football Talk, yep. I believe it is. So yep. She is now doubled down on this. So, huh, how about that? Maybe Belichick was just mad at the league is what that was. Yeah, talk to the league. It's a league matter. Maybe a little bit... I don't know. He shouldn't. I don't know if he necessarily should have said we have nothing to do with Josh Gordon.
Yeah, because again, you still own his rights. Yeah, if he gets reinstated, then you have to, you know, clear a roster spot.
Actually, do have a lot to do with Josh Gordon. But overall, okay. So this is a positive step. If he's applying for reinstatement, hopefully everything works out, and hopefully he doesn't have to continue to battle with his demons. But more than anything else, should they be counting on this guy?
No, they shouldn't. But you know, maybe it's the same attitude as last year, Jim, which is, look, if he can give us 11 or 12 games, and it was 11 in your uniform last year, 12 overall. And help us, we'll take it, and we'll figure it out when we get to the playoffs, like we did last time. Now, I would say that I don't think that's the wisest course of action. I'm not sure that's repeatable. But given where they're at in that wide receiver core in that position, I think they'll roll the dice again, and they'd welcome him back with open arms. I mean, the guy's not reliable. We root for him. I've said this from the moment they got him. I like the guy. I root for him. I hope he can stay on the field. I hope he can get it together. And, you know, look... He's had some issues. Some of them I think we would look at culturally and say that's not a big deal, you know, in terms of the marijuana. Some of the other ones I think Patriots fans tend to have short memories on, like, you know, Sizzurp, codeine. Like, it's not just marijuana, which is what tends to happen when we have this discussion. Like, he's had serious substance abuse issues in his life that I hope that he can...
It feels like alcohol is the biggest issue with
him. At this point, yeah. I don't know for a fact, but at this point, yes, that could be the case. But I think you just have to know when you go into business with Josh Gordon, you just have to know what you're doing and what you're getting into, which is the idea that he can really help your team. You can start to rely on him. And then in the most important games of the year, he can disappear in terms of, and I don't mean on the field. I mean, literally disappear, like not in your stadium, disappear because of his history. And as long as they're okay with that, and I think relatively speaking, they are, then I think he'll have the same role he had last year if he gets reinstated.
Well, bigger picture, it just speaks to wide receiver and how they've handled that position over the last couple of years. It's just been, I don't know, to rely on a guy like that, given his history, it just speaks to a desperation and how they've handled it. They've completely mishandled it, and hopefully things work out for N'Keal Harry, who they draft first overall, but is, based on everything I've read, and you've been down there a little bit more than I have already, like, has had an iffy camp, a lot of drops, not lining up in the right place. So I don't know. It just feels like, to me, still going into this, it's Julian Edelman and a lot of question marks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's... I mean, I like my guy, Maurice Harris. You know, we'll see if he can sort of do an Amendola thing. He's kind of slowed down. I thought Doug Kide of Nesson had a funny meme that he tweeted. It was like, basically like, you know, a highway sign. And like, there was an exit ramp and it said Jacoby Myers. And there was a car and he put for the car, Patriots reporters taking the exit for Jacoby Myers. And straight ahead was like the Maurice Harris.
Yeah.
You know, I think people are sort of jumping on the Jacoby Myers train now. I like him too. But McCone and I were talking off the air. And Tim, you said this. And I agree with you on this. It sort of has a little bit of a 2013 vibe where we're going to, like, talk up Kenbrell Tompkins, not realizing that, yeah, you know, not bad for an undrafted free agent, but...
You drafted also, Aaron Dobson in the second round,
but,
right?
And Josh Boyce, and it's like, oh, these guys, you know, whatever. And it's really like, these guys aren't good. They're just the best you have.
Yeah, Tim, have you been down there, too, for, you know, because you work at a sports station down in Providence, or do you, what's the station again?
WJAR.
Yeah, NBC 10 down in Providence. Yeah, we've been a few times, and it's the same thing like Chris was just saying. It feels like 2013, where it's like, yeah, Tompkins is popping, but that's because everyone else sucks. You know what I mean? So we'll see what happens, but certainly I would be concerned right now in terms of the wide receiver position.
Yeah, so on Felger and Maz yesterday, Ted Johnson was in, and he has said, and we've all heard this, you know, that follow football and watch football, like defense is always ahead of the offenses at this time of year, and it camp and usually for the first month of the year, but I don't know, given some of these names, are you guys a little bit concerned how, you know, some of the struggles you hear or see about the offense at camp?
Well, I mean, I'm really looking forward to these joint practice sessions with the Lions. The Lions are a team that knows you well because Matt Patricia is the coach, your former defensive coordinator. They beat you last year when you were depleted at wide receiver when Edelman was suspended and you threw Hogan and Dorsett out there, so they know how to sort of press you and capitalize and take advantage of the fact that you don't have Edelman there and that your wide receivers might not be, you know, fully in Brady's circle of trust. And on the other side of the ball, your defense is good if you're the Patriots. It's really good. But But I think we'll sort of get a gauge of just how good it is and how much of what we've seen is the level of competition, because you're going to go up against Stafford, who's not the greatest quarterback, but he can sling it. Kenny Galladay's there. Marvin Jones is still there.
Well, they have giant tight ends.
They brought in T.J. Hockenson, the kid from Iowa, at tight end. So I think you're going to see a better so Kerryon Johnson, who burned them last year and can catch the ball to the backfield. So I think we'll get a little bit better gauge of just where the Patriots are at offensively and defensively in these joint practices. I think we're really going to get a good sense of what's real and what's sort of a mirage.
All right, add that to the conversation. Josh Gordon, again, has apparently applied for reinstatement to the NFL. So that's good news, I guess, but should the Patriots really be counting on this guy considering what happened last year and his past? 617-779-0985, you want to talk about that, anything Patriots-related, and, of course, you want to pitch about the Red Sox, see if you're hanging. We'll do that. Coming up next is we also revisit some of the comments made by Dave Dombrowski after the trade deadline when the Red Sox did nothing earlier this week. We'll get to that coming up in our long commercial-free segment next here on Gasper and Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That might be my favorite comment from anyone in Boston sports in a while. Dave Dombrowski, after the trade deadline, came and went on Tuesday. Sitting up there, all smug. Oh, you wouldn't believe how many people called me about our bullpen. You think our bullpen sucks? I've heard someone around here refer to it as the wheel of gutless bums. How dare you? People have been calling me. My phone's been ringing off the hook. Hell, people trying to FaceTime me, Dave Dombrowski, so they want to see my handsome hair and what kind of turtleneck I'm wearing today. Trying to make a deal because they want someone like Darwin's and Hernandez or Heath Hembry. Ugh, you people think you know baseball. You don't know baseball like me. Like, okay, so maybe, you know what, tell you what, maybe some teams did call. Matt McCarthy, who does the Hardcore Baseball podcast, said, you know, he actually believed it. Maybe teams did call because they looked at the Red Sox and said, well, they're underachieving. They kind of suck. I bet they're selling. So maybe those calls did happen. But for him to sit there the way that he did and just say it's so smug, oh, God. And on one end, it made me laugh. And the other, it's like, who do you take Red Sox fans for? Who do you take Boston sports fans for? Like, do you know where you are? This isn't Miami, where you once were, or even Detroit, where they've become completely apathetic about that ball club. People pay attention here. This is like spitting in their faces. It's insulting, is what it is. I thought a lot of what he said on Tuesday was insulting.
Well, I mean, I think he was trying to put the best face on it. What's weird to me, Jim, and sort of what I'm having a hard time reconciling and where I find the contradiction to be is he seemed to be simultaneously sort of saying or giving the idea that they could have made all these deals. They didn't. So they had the ammunition to make the deals, right? But they didn't make deals, but that doesn't mean that they're unmoved or unmotivated by the team. And I'm like, what?
No, huh? It was a lot of fence riding.
It really was. Which is it? And so my colleague Alex Spear wrote a story that's pretty good today, sort of breaking down some of the deals that were made and what the Red Sox equivalent would be. And my takeaway from it is that, you know, Major League Baseball, not as high on the farm system as Dombrowski is. And that I think the Red Sox could have made these deals, but they're clinging to guys that I would say are mid-tier prospects that have suddenly become upper-tier prospects for them. Their value's been inflated in the mind of the Red Sox because the system's not that deep. And also, there was a tweet by, is it Mark Feinsand, who works for MLB.com, who basically said in the tweet that the Red Sox were told by teams they tried to deal with that they liked other teams' prospects better.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, so you're talking like guys, what, like Bobby Dalbec, you know, any of these mid-tier guys?
I think a guy like Dalbec is being overrated. He's 24 years old in AA. He just turned 24. Has great power and a strong arm at third, but he's at third. He's blocked by Devers. They also have a kid, Brandon Howlett, who's a third base prospect, who's below him in Greenville. The guy strikes out a ton. I mean, he strikes out like he's Rob Deere at the plate. I would have given that guy up for a minute. I just think they're artificially inflating some of the guys they have in the system that are halfway decent because they don't have a lot of depth, because they don't have a lot of those mid-tier guys. So the guys they do have get elevated to being upper-tier in their minds, in their system, but they're not really upper-tier guys. Like, I'll give you another guy real quick, Jaron Duran, who got off to a world-beater start in Salem, speedy outfielder. His OPS was like .998 at Salem. It was incredible. Since they moved him up to AA Portland, his OPS is in the 600s. And that doesn't mean he's not a prospect. It's prospect. It's 615. It's just like, hey, the guy's really fast, but if he's not going to hit for any power or any extra bases at the major league level, then he's probably a fourth outfielder. Would you trade a fourth outfielder prospect for bullpen help?
Yeah.
Yeah, so would absolutely. I mean,
no, they've either overvalued or perhaps even worse, they just looked at this team this year and said, no, it's on you. So, like, you know, in the blame pie, the old Eddie Edelman blame pie, I mean, everyone should be throwing it.
Sure.
And Dave Dombrowski is complicit because how he handled this going into the season and not addressing the bullpen and just crossing his fingers and hoping the best. Like, that, you're an idiot. What do you expect here? But after that point, like, the underachieving, the overall underachievement that you've seen from this team,
sure,
especially from the rotation and guys like Chris Sale, the season he's having, like, that's on them, too. Like, you got to, and their reaction to and how they've played since the trade deadline, like, what a bunch of babies.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I'm probably not putting enough of it on the players, particularly your three starting pitchers. Those guys, I mean,
21 combined wins for them.
I mean, I think Price has been good most of the year, but obviously not in the last, you know, geez, what's it, 8 or 9 starts now. But Porcello's been a major disappointment, ERA in the fives. I think Sale's been a major disappointment. The stuff has fluctuated between good and very hittable. And he's your ace, and he has one win at home, and we're in August. He's won at Fenway Park one time this year. That's unacceptable. But at the same time, I also look at it and say, Jim, that the game overall is trending more towards a bullpen game. We know that. Dombrowski knew that. And I just think psychologically, if some of these games earlier in the year, like that game in Chicago where Devers made the error and then Brazier served up the walk-off home run, like if they'd won that game or some of these other games where the bullpen messed them up, I just think psychologically they'd be in a better place. I think psychologically it wears on a team when you have uncertainty, unreliability, and instability at the back end of a bullpen. I just think it creates this anxiety that permeates an entire team and leads to that team underachieving.
Well, it's one of those things Tony Mazz has always said, and he's covered the game just about as much as anybody else has covering baseball for the last 20, 25 years. Nothing undermines a ball club like a bad bullpen.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's played out a lot for the Red Sox this year. Bob and Needham on last night's game and Sox's Red Sox bad week. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I can't believe, you know, Chris, of all the people, you don't get the bigger picture here.
Sure.
The fact is, Pedroia, Pablo, Castillo, Thornburg, that's $65 million. That's not even a playing and hasn't played at all. So don't tell me that they have the highest payroll because they don't. Because it takes $65 million for four guys that haven't played one inning of baseball for the team.
Okay, so but hold on 1 second. Let me just answer that, and I'll let you make your next point. I hear what you're saying. Pedroia, not Dombrowski's fault. Sandoval, not his fault. Good point. But Thornburg, he brought him in, and Castillo has toiled in the minors because he doesn't
Pedroia
count.
But
Castillo does not count, is my point here. He does not count against the CBT. So they're paying out that money, but that's not hamstringing them.
When I hear the highest payroll in baseball, that all goes against the CBT.
No, but that's what I'm telling you. Ruzne Castillo doesn't count. That's why he's in AAA.
Yeah, but John Henry doesn't view it like that. He knows he's paying that guy $14 million.
And that's a fair point. That's the budget.
So he won't go over the luxury tax because he has to pay that guy who's down in Pawtucket, right?
I think you're conflating the budget and the luxury tax.
You think he doesn't worry about the money? Really?
No, I think you're right about the budget. He's concerned about the budget. But when you start talking about the CBT, that's a little different. They have some room there.
Chris, let me ask you this.
Yes.
How much do you think they gross average? I'd say $600-700 million a year between the ballpark, Ness, and everything, just on the baseball team. And they're paying $240 million, and they're saying they're broke.
Yeah, no, look, I think they should spend more. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying let's not confuse the overall budget, which I think is a factor, with the CBT, with the luxury tax. Because they still have room under the luxury tax. So, you know, look, when you start talking about Castillo, I get it. There's real money that has to be paid out to that guy. But the whole reason he's been – look, he was parked in AAA last year and they won the World Series, right? And had the highest payroll in baseball. And nobody was saying, oh, poor Red Sox, they have to pay Ruzne
no,
Castillo.
No, it's an easy excuse.
Come on.
Graham and Haverhill on the Red Sox. You're next year on Gaspar Murray. Hey, Graham.
Hey, guys. Big fan here. I'm a firefighter. We listen to you guys every Saturday.
Oh,
so,
appreciate
everything you guys do.
In
Haverhill? What?
Oh, yeah. In Haverhill. Yeah, right on Water Street.
Nice.
Nice. Thanks.
So, quick question, guys. I know the whole farm system has been depleted, and that's kind of the talk of the town, and we're inflating our assets to try and make more trades. With that said, in Dombrowski's defense, has he really traded away anybody that has turned out to be anything? So I feel like you know, his tactics have kind of worked, because I'm trying to think. I know Kopech got her for sale, but otherwise he's made some trades that, you know, basically got something for what's turned out to be nothing.
Graham, I think that's a good point. I would say Yoan Moncada's had a very good year this year. He's turned into something. But I give Dombrowski all the credit for this, and I wrote in my column, I don't think he gets enough credit for being able to do, Jim, what Ben Charrington could not. Ben Charrington would cling to every prospect because he couldn't distill the ones that mattered from the ones that didn't. Theo was good at that, the old pump and dump. Tony would tell you that. I think Dombrowski's really good. Dombrowski was like, Benintendi? Nope, not moving him. Devers? Nope, not moving him. He's done a really good job of discerning which guys you hang on to and which guys you move. I just say he hasn't done as good a job of replenishing them. And I think in some of these deals, he tends to throw guys in willy-nilly. Like, it's like, oh, you want a fourth prospect, like one of these mid-tier prospects, like a Mauricio Dubon or a Sean Anderson or a Ty Buttrey. You want one of those guys? He'll just kind of throw that guy in. And then when you get to a situation like this year at the deadline, you don't have that guy and you haven't really replaced that guy. Like, you look at the Red Sox farm system, almost all the guys who really matter and you can really get excited about, almost all of them. I mean, there's Brian Mata, there's, I guess, Dahlbeck, however you feel. Those guys are above AA and above. But almost all of them are below AA. So at that point, for almost any team, it's like a lottery ticket. How can you project that, those guys? How can you project guys that are in single A or in Lowell at short season A or in the Gulf Coast League? That's a huge projection. So you're asking some other team to basically say, yeah, give us this player for a lottery ticket type of guy who might never amount to anything.
Red Sox have now lost five straight, been an ugly week for them. First time they've lost five in a row since 2015. Last time they missed the playoffs. So I'm legitimately curious. Like, you, the Red Sox fan, are you angry? Are you now apathetic? Are you waving the white flag, seemingly like this team has done? In a game like last night, they lose 4-2 to the Yankees. 617-779-0985. We'll get to more of your calls and dig a little bit deeper into this ugly week and this bad loss to the Yankees last night. They got the doubleheader on tap coming up here. First, though, we'll give you the Sports Hub headlines with, well, they call him Mr. Pump and Dump on the streets. It's Tim McCone here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.